and welcome to The Epic Echo, a podcast designed to reflect the lives and stories of your community, brought to you by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center in West Virginia.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Epic Echo. As usual, I am your host, Nora Frazier, Community Coordinator at the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center. Today's guest is Rosemary Ketchum. Rosemary is a city council member in Wheeling, West Virginia, and a well-known community organizer and public figure. Rosemary graduated from Wheeling Jesuit University in May 2019 with a bachelor's degree in psychology. She was then elected to Wheeling City Council on June 9th, 2020, after running a campaign that was fueled by community input and involvement and combines these powers to face issues such as homelessness, addiction, poverty, racism, and affordable housing. Who better to have on the show to talk about community organizing and empowerment? So without further ado, I want to give Rosemary the opportunity to introduce herself. And thank you so much for being here with us today, Rosemary.
Oh my goodness, that's the sweetest thing. Thank you so much, Nora. I'm grateful to be here.
We are going to spend the majority of our time today talking about community organizing, obviously. I know that Wheeling wasn't your first community, your community of origin. You kind of found it. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that story?
Sure. I did not grow up in Wheeling. I am not a native West Virginian, which is often a prerequisite for running for local office in West Virginia. So I was able to overcome that obstacle, thank goodness. But I was born in East Liverpool, Ohio, to a pair of wonderful blue-collar parents, and lived there for many, many years until I was 16. And unfortunately, we experienced a house fire in 2010. And, it really threw our, family into a lot of chaos and confusion, like many, families are in after a house fire. We didn't have a backup plan. My parents did not have a savings account. We didn't have home insurance. We didn't have any of the things that are typical and any of those safety nets. So we were really at square one. And we made a decision to leave East Liverpool, which is a very small town of about 10,000 people, and set our sights on a different city. I did not know anybody in Wheeling. My sister lived here only for a couple years, but it was a very, very new and somewhat scary place. Unfortunately, I believed a lot of the stereotypes that kind of persist around West Virginia before moving here. And, I've been here over a decade now and have fallen in love with not just Wheeling, but the entire state of West Virginia. And it has now become my adopted state. And I defend West Virginia like I'm from here, which is, I think that's a good thing.
Well, I have to say, I think I speak for the majority in that we are very fortunate to have you. Mm. I feel very lucky that you made that move just across the border there. I'm calling the episode Panhandle to Panhandle just because, obviously, from the Northern Panhandle to the Eastern Panhandle, that's where we're communicating from today. I do also have some connections to the Northern Panhandle. I've got some family that live over there, so I love the area. It's a great community.
Aww.
And I can definitely see that it's probably a pretty easy community to get involved in. So I'm wondering now if you'll explain to our listeners what exactly community organizing is and kind of how you found your way into community organizing once you made your way to Wheeling.
Ooh, that's a big question. I mean, the phrase itself feels self-explanatory, organizing a community, but it is, when you are doing it, much more complicated than that. I got my start in community organizing before I even knew there was a name for it. I, knew that I wanted to support and help out my community insofar as helping my community, but also selfishly wanting to be involved and make friends and, kind of curate or develop this sense of belonging that I think so many folks, particularly, people who aren't from a specific area, search for. And so I got involved in a couple, campaigns and issues and initiatives that I care a lot about, including mental health and healthcare. homelessness and other things, of course, LGBTQ rights. And it happened really quickly. You know, West Virginia is a funny place. You know, it feels, you know, like its own bubble, but I have found it to be incredibly welcoming and inviting. If you just raise your hand and say, I'll help or I'll volunteer, most folks will say thank you and give you, you know, anything you want, you know, in regards to support and help and assistance. And so it, the perception might be that it's hard to get involved and that there are many gatekeepers and that, you know, there is a bubble, and that's not untrue. It depends on which, you know, communities you're in, but our community organizing, you know, group here in the state of West Virginia is a pretty tight group of folks. And so to define community organizing, I guess, is to define what people care about and how they make their voices heard. And so for the longest time, before ever considering a run for office, I made a very stark distinction between community organizers and politicians. I thought they are very different breeds of people just by principle. I thought community organizers, you know, supported and helped out their community in a grassroots level, and politicians did something else very strange and removed from, you know, the people who really matter. And I believed that for a very long time. But I soon realized that, you know, community organizing is really hard if you don't have a seat at the table, and you can knock on all the doors in the world. But if you don't have a friend or an ally, I should say, behind that door, you're probably not going to get very much done. And so, you know, very soon, many community organizers will describe, you know, all kinds of burnout and fatigue and compassion fatigue, particularly in areas that are tough to organize in, like West Virginia. I mean, we have a great group of folks, but West Virginia is a tough place because, you know, if you're organizing around particularly progressive or stereotypically democratic values, particularly you know, since 2016 and even before then, it's been really tough to break out of this, you know, partisan narrative, just so that we could talk about how we, you know, should care for our communities of color or address opioid addiction and mental health, or that, you know, housing is a human right and we should be able to support that and find that for people. And so I realized that I would continue to be frustrated unless I, you know, tried to be the person on the other side of the door who could actually have a seat at the table and a vote to make. And that took years and years to come to fruition, but it finally did. I don't know if that answers your question, Nora. That was a word salad. That's kind of how it makes sense to me.
It was a loaded question, so we always expect a loaded answer. No, I think that was a perfect answer. And this wasn't my next question, but now it's kind of led me there. I'm wondering if you can tell us, now that you've kind of claimed that seat at the table, what you're doing for those community organizers who are in the same spot you were before you became a councilman.
Oh, fascinating. Yes. So I think what happens, and I've seen this unfortunately happen, a lot of well-meaning folks run for office and somewhat adopt what they were fighting. This, I want to say, you know, air quotes, establishment mentality that you have to follow a status quo and process and procedure are more important than principle and these kinds of things. And of course, there is structure, we have to follow the rules, we can't break the law, those are really important. But there are kind of norms and mores that are not, I think, natural or even effective that some folks adopt. So I've tried really hard to, now that I have a seat at the table as a member of city council, to empower and uplift the people who are organizing who don't yet have that, you know, privilege to have this formal seat. Or this formal vote. And in a couple very non-radical ways, I meet with our community organizers all the time, and I ask how I can help. And I still kind of feel like a scrappy organizer, and I just kind of snuck into the room with all the big kids, and I get to and I get to help out and kind of cause a ruckus. And I hope I don't lose that, because I feel I don't feel like I belong in a good way, if that makes sense. I feel like we're slowly changing what it means to be a politician, and that's uncomfortable and awkward. but I think it ultimately is really, really important. And being honest with community organizers and saying like, yeah, you should be yelling at us. You should be coming to meetings and shaming us for not doing X, Y, and Z, and not asking them to be respectful all of the time, because the even the concept of respect is really latent with, I think, racism and sexism and homophobia. Just like, stay in your lane, be nice to us, and maybe we'll listen to you. Like, that's not okay. And that's, I mean, that's how I felt as a community organizer, that it was very condescending and patronizing. So that's not the kind of elected official that I'm willing to be. And so being able to lengthen the table that I sit at and allow other organizers and people who don't even identify as organizers, but just, you know, caring community members, allowing them to help me make the decisions as a member of council has been incredibly valuable and has helped me, you know, in so many instrumental ways.
I think that's phenomenal. And I'm absolutely sure that your community can feel that. I hope that you are a trailblazer in so many ways, as we all already know, but I truly think that's so powerful, that you're creating this new example of what it can be like to be a local politician. And I truly hope that we see more of a shift, and more people like you pulling up seats to the table and expanding those tables. Like you said, I think that was a great way to phrase that. So we're going to get back into your community organizing days. I'm going to ask you to take it back a few more years. I'm wondering if you can help us again. You've defined it for us, but our podcast is oppression based. So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the issues that your work focused on when you were still on the ground as a community organizer. Mm-hmm. And then tell us a little bit more about how you helped other community members kind of find their voice and get involved.
Mm-hmm. Some of my strongest community organizing memories happened around a couple organizations, including the West Virginia Families, Healthy Kids and Families Coalition, that was headed by Stephen Smith, who is now leading the West Virginia Can't Wait movement. Which was kind of the impetus for my run for office, but they focused on a lot of, you know, different things, but most importantly, I think access to healthy foods for kids in schools and in their communities, which is so powerful and matters so much to me, and is the work that I'm doing now. Besides being a member of council, I work for a youth public health coalition called Edible Mountain, focused on, in part, food literacy and food access. And so we know, as you know, healthcare providers know this, organizers know this, some elected officials know this, and more should, that access to healthy foods is foundational to the success of children and ultimately, you know, adults. And so many of our communities are food deserts. And if they're not food deserts, they have little or no healthy, thoughtful options. And so that's some of the work that I was so excited to do, but also focused around child poverty and family poverty, including housing, healthcare. One of my greatest community organizing mentors is Amy Jo Hutchison, who used to, I believe, work for the West Virginia Healthy Kids and Families Coalition, and now has her own incredible initiative called Rattle the Windows. And so I admire the work that she's done, and she's taught me so much. One of the other organizations that I've worked with and love so much is the ACLU of West Virginia. I was a board member for many years. Unfortunately, had to step down as a board member once I was elected to office, because occasionally the ACLU will sue Wheeling, and I didn't want to be in between it, thank goodness, although I miss the folks there. And their work is so broad and so incredible, you know, focusing on LGBTQ rights, racial justice, immigrant rights. And I think they are doing perhaps the most important work anywhere in the state of West Virginia. And they are working on you know, in Charleston, on the Hill, but also in communities throughout the state of West Virginia organizing. And so I really, I think, cut my teeth on what it meant to be an organizer, and also my very early introductions to politics through the ACLU, lobbying for various bills and talking to legislators. And so they are you know, incredible folks. And I would, you know, if they offered me a position on their board tomorrow, I'd probably say yes. But those are some of the organizations that are doing great work and that I've been able to learn from, you know, that are empowering our most vulnerable community members. And hopefully folks have an opportunity to celebrate that work as well.
Great. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fantastic work. Thank you for giving us a little bit more in-depth look into that. So now, again, we're going to address our regular community members that may be listening, who may be hearing about community organizing for the first time. How does one get involved that has never even heard the word community organizing before? How do you kind of get your feet wet?
So I would say, if you're wondering if you should identify as a community organizer, you have to ask yourself a couple questions. Do you care about your community? And in what specific context? There are a lot of things wrong with our neighborhoods and communities across the state of West Virginia, but most folks care about a couple things. And so if it's healthcare, then you should organize around this. If it's housing, that's really important to you. If it's civil rights, then that's the kind of community organizer you might be. If it's all of that, you're gonna be a busy person, but more power to you. So that's the first question that you need to ask yourself. What do you care about? And be very specific about it. It's not helpful to say, I just care about people, or I care about my neighborhood, but in what specific way do you care? And then one step further, who else around you cares or should care, or maybe doesn't feel compelled enough to think about it or to contextualize it for themselves? And that's where the organizing comes in. Talking to your neighbors, knocking doors, calling your friends and saying, even if it's a small issue, I know that here in the city of Wheeling, some folks are organizing around a recreation center that has, a historically Black recreation center, the only city-owned rec center we have, and has experienced years of disinvestment. This isn't a political issue necessarily, but this is an issue that our community has really rallied around. And so, for example, it took a couple really passionate community members to say, this is wrong. Somebody needs to, you know, be accountable for this disinvestment and this neglect of this facility. And we're going to organize around making something happen and holding folks accountable. And it's been incredibly successful. We've had tens of thousands of dollars now allocated to this space, and we're hopefully going to have many more dollars allocated to this space, in part because people said enough is enough and they organized around it. And I think we should dispel the myth that it takes a special person to do it. It doesn't. And you don't have to be an expert, and you don't have to know the rules, and you don't have to have gone to college or have any of these stereotypical qualifications that you assume are necessary to do something like this. The most important qualification to have is that you care, and you can go from there, and hopefully that fuels the work that you can do. But the most important advice I could give you is to build a really strong team. Because burnout is real, fatigue is real, and I've seen a lot of folks try to organize on their own, and they not only feel like a failure, but they do fail to organize folks because they try to do it by themselves. So find folks who really care about similar issues and build friendships with them. And that's ultimately what this is about. It's about community relationships, being strong enough to move mountains. Some literal mountains in West Virginia and some figurative ones. So I don't know if that's too nebulous a description, but that's how I've seen it done, and it can be incredibly successful. And I remind folks, particularly just yesterday, I was having a conversation with some community organizers and advocates in the neighborhood, and they were like, Rosemary, what do we do about this issue? You know, who should we speak to? How should we do it? Should we start a petition? And I said, you could do all of that, and that's great, but first, reach out to your member of council, let them know you care about this, and tell them, I'm coming to the next council meeting with a group of my neighbors, And we're going to talk about this in a thoughtful way, but we're going to do this in public, and the media is going to be there, and our neighbors are going to be there. You're going to be there, and everybody's going to know we had this conversation. Honestly, the last thing elected officials wanted to be is shamed in public, but sometimes that's the best way to get something done, is to show them what they haven't done and ask them what they plan to do. And so I always love to see that. And it was fun for me to do as an organizer, and now fun for me to be as an elected, to be on the other side of the table. But yes, I think those are some of the pieces of advice that I would give, and some of the structure around what community organizing looks like as I know it.
That was perfect. Yet again, another great answer. So the success stories are amazing. And it sounds like your community in Wheeling has quite a few of those. But I did want to spend just a little bit of time pulling that curtain back. I want everybody to feel that they are getting fully informed on this subject. So can you tell us a little bit about those barriers? You just gave us a little bit of insight to one and kind of what to do. But maybe give us an example, or just tell us about some barriers you can face, and then kind of mentally or physically, what do you do when you hit those barriers, and maybe even the ones you can't work around as easily, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, we are all human beings, and I think a lot of folks I see jump into community organizing and either hope to be or pretend to be superhuman, and it's the opposite. you should lead with vulnerability, because that is what will fuel you. If you put up this wall of infallibility, it will only, I think, contribute to your fallibility, and will only contribute to your insecurities. I think for myself, one of the, I've worked in mental health for many years, and we talk about with clients, negative feedback loops. And we all have, these phrases that we say to ourselves about ourselves. And we all have different ones, but there's a couple that are common. And one of mine is, who do you think you are? It's just like, I want to take on something big or challenge an idea, and I feel really confident and excited. And then this negative feedback loop kind of creeps into my brain and says, like, who do you think you are? You think, this is something that you can do? Why you? Why not somebody else? And I know other people experience this as well. And that's, an example of, a concept called imposter syndrome that a lot of people experience, but might not have the terminology or the language to describe. But imposter syndrome is something that I've experienced for many years. And essentially, it's described as feeling like a fraud, or feeling like you don't belong, or feeling like you snuck into the after party and you're just pretending that you're supposed to be there with all the cool folks. And the more that we talk about it and expose it, actually, the less scary it becomes, because we realize that actually, most people feel this way. Most people question their own inabilities or their own abilities to do the work, and they compare themselves with others. That's just what being human is like, unfortunately. But some folks experience more than others. And folks who have experienced historic oppression, folks who are part of marginalized or vulnerable communities, are far more likely to experience these things, because either we've not had the privilege of being in privileged spaces for our whole lives. We've not been told that we're the best and smartest people in the world for our whole lives by our communities and societies and cultures. Or we've been told the exact opposite, that you're not valuable, that your voice isn't important, that you don't contribute to your community, your society, or the conversation. And that you don't have a seat at the table because you don't deserve one. And we internalize those things because they're more perceived than real sometimes. And I know I have internalized those, believing when I, came to Wheeling that I would be completely excommunicated by my community, by virtue of my being a transgender person, but also a young person, also from Ohio, which is sometimes worse than all three. and that was not the case at all. I mean, people were incredibly inviting. And so overcoming those obstacles that are sometimes self-imposed, or at least sometimes self-propelled, are very difficult. And some of the ways that I'm able to do that, again, just being vulnerable and honest about it and talking about it. Again, I think shame thrives in silence. It feeds on it like mold in the darkness. It absolutely loves it. So the more you're able to say like, oh yeah, I feel overwhelmed, or yes, I'm insecure about this, or I feel like an imposter sometimes, it does the opposite of what you think it will. I love leadership books and self-help things. And so much, research, finds that people trust people who are vulnerable and don't pretend to know it all and don't pretend to be experts all the time about everything. People who say, oh, I got that wrong, or actually, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, are actually found to be more trustworthy and more valuable as leaders. So I think lead with your heart, lead with vulnerability, and then just be kind to yourself and know when to stop. Sometimes I think we assume again that we need to be superhuman and be the best and strongest in the room, but that's not the case. You need to, really value your own mental wellness. And when you are overwhelmed or are burnout, then that's a red flag that you need to pull back and kind of reassess. And I've had to do that many times in my life. And I think, that has really saved me from from all kinds of, unhealthy decisions. So those are a couple of things that I would advise folks if they're, up against some of these obstacles.
I always take away a piece of something from the episodes, and I try to take it home with me and kind of unpack it and reflect on kind of how it made me feel. And I can already tell, I can identify my buzz phrase that I'm going to be reflecting on later, and I hope my audience will too. And that is lead with vulnerability. I think that carries a lot of weight as a statement, and I cannot wait to go home and kind of reflect and think about that a little bit later this evening, because when I really wrote this question, I was imagining the physical or the barriers that we can kind of see and talk about, but those internal barriers, I think that was almost even more so what people need to hear about, because those are the things that you feel like only you can relate to. So I think that was very, very helpful. And it even kind of shed a new light on that topic for me. So thank you so much.
Oh.
We talked about barriers. Now I want to give you your moment to tell us about the successes or positive outcomes that you have directly gotten to see as a result of either your community organizing or the community organizing that you've just been around since you kind of joined that community.
Wonderful. I definitely, since I didn't answer the question exactly the way I probably should have.
Better, sure. Even better.
But some of the, I think it's important to acknowledge some of the actual physical barriers that exist to either running for office or being elected. And one of those that we don't often talk about is the financial burden required to run for office. A small office like mine might only, cost a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars to run a race. But if you're interested in running a race where you represent more individuals or a larger scope of land, it costs a lot of money to run. And I think it's one of the most, if not the most prohibitive factor for folks wanting to run for office, because they say, I can't afford it, I don't know how to fundraise, or I don't want to go to jail because I screw up and I don't know what I'm doing. And all of those thoughts, ran through my head. So doing a lot of research, getting a good treasurer, somebody who's either done it before or is a certified CPA or has a great background in that work is critically important. We were able to do it internally as a campaign, but if I run for office again, I wouldn't do it that way, because it gets incredibly complicated. And even in a small race, it's a little scary. And so I would definitely ensure that you kind of acknowledge and overcome that barrier early and realize it's not insurmountable, that, once you get in the groove of it, it's totally fine. And then I would go into those, internal barriers. So I think that the monetary obstacles are often the largest and most prohibitive. So just an amendo on the last answer. But some of the things that we've been able to work on, I attended my first State of the City address here in Wheeling, given by our mayor as a member of council on Tuesday, which was incredibly exciting and felt full circle and all kinds of things. It's been a little over a year since the election. And I think like any new job, there is a learning curve that takes place. Particularly when you're in this new environment. I've never been an elected official before, and I've never been inside of the structure and the kind of process of making the sausage, as they say. And so learning all that and becoming comfortable with learning the rules before you bend and break the rules is really important to me. And I finally feel incredibly comfortable or far more comfortable than I did when I was elected. But I have been incredibly excited by this past year. Despite a pandemic, we've been able to accomplish many different things, including passing a resolution, making Wheeling the first city in the state of West Virginia to acknowledge racism as a public health crisis. Other states have done this across the nation, but Wheeling was the first in the state of West Virginia. And I thought that was incredibly powerful and affirmed our place as the friendly city, which is our city moniker. And, you know, with that, it was not, you know, just a symbolic resolution, but in that laid out a process for creating equity and diversity in our city government, ensuring that the people who work for us reflect the communities that we serve, while also, you know, having conversations around potentially hiring a diversity and inclusion director in this city of Wheeling. I think that would be powerful and really help us make some progress. So that was a pretty early win. I believe that happened in October of 2020, which I'm incredibly grateful for. A recent win, we were able to pass an ordinance to hire a homeless liaison coordinator in the city of Wheeling. We experience, I think, a disproportional amount of homelessness here in the city of Wheeling. It's chronic and severe and has been far-reaching for many, many years. And while we have incredible organizations, we do not yet, in my opinion, have a coordinated strategy. And the city has not had a hand or a seat at the table or a hands-on approach in the way that we should. And while this was a split vote, I believe it was 4-3, not unanimous, we were able to pass this coordinator position because I think we realize how critical it is. And of course, that's the first step to addressing a much larger problem with chronic homelessness. But that is something that probably would not have happened unless we had some progressive, thoughtful leaders in city government pushing for issues that that matter. So those are a couple of things that come to mind immediately. And then we have smaller wins about, I was talking about this recreation center that has been, a big conversation. And we were able to secure some additional funding for that, not as much as we need. But that's a very small win, but an important, I think, component to the overall, you know, success of our communities. And then to close, we are, grateful to be receiving $29.5 million in American Rescue Plan funds in two installments. And, partly these are, will be spent to repair and build sewer and water infrastructure, but they will also be part of COVID relief, which, as outlined, is a pretty broad description of what can be used or what can be funded through this these monies. So very excited to have conversations about what that looks like and how we can support our communities through the American Rescue Plan.
That's all phenomenal. And I think shows a great range of victories from small to obviously very, very large. And I think that it also shows just how much you truly care about those issues, because you have been organizing for them for such a long time. And now that you have a seat at the table, it's very clear that you're using it to progress the work that you've done and the work that those community members are still doing. And I think that that's absolutely fantastic. Before we close out for the day, I am going to give you an opportunity to give a word of Rosemary Ketchum encouragement to anybody in any community throughout the state
who thinks that it may be their time to strap up their boots and begin community organizing. Whatever you have to say, a pearl of wisdom, some advice, encouragement, this is your platform.
Ooh, that's a great one. Well, I think we have adopted the problems we have today because nobody else could fix them. And if you are interested in organizing in your community, that is a sign, that is a green light that you can do it and that you should do it, because it's likely a calling for you if you felt compelled to make it happen. You're gonna be scared, you're gonna make mistakes, it's not always going to work out, but all of those are ingredients to successful community organizing. So I believe in you, I know you can do it. It's a better time than ever. We've had more access, more resources than we've ever had to organize. And if you need a cheerleader, feel free to reach out because I'm on your side.
Perfect. I definitely feel encouraged. So before we wrap things up, if you have anything that you would like to add about upcoming events, projects, anything that you want to put on blast here, that's you can have some space to do that before we wrap up. And if not, then we can go ahead and close out.
Oh my goodness. Well, I want to ask everybody to come to Wheeling to visit our beautiful city. If you're in the Eastern Panhandle, come to the Northern Panhandle. She's super cute. And if you do make a trip up here, reach out to me on Instagram or Facebook, and I'd love to give you a personal tour of our neighborhoods.
Perfect. Yeah. As the episode is called, Panhandle to Panhandle, you can give it a listen while you're driving from the Eastern Panhandle to the Northern Panhandle this weekend. Well, thank you so much, Rosemary. This has been fantastic. I hope that all of the listeners have gained a little bit of insight to community organizing and hopefully some encouragement.
Oh, thank you so much, Nora. You're the best.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Epic Echo. To suggest topic ideas or future guests, you can go to our website at epicwv.org.